you will, please make sure you have signed in on the sign-in sheets. And once that's done, we're ready to hear the case of Maloney versus the Commonwealth.
Please record out of McMillan Powers, and I'm representing Nicholas Maloney this morning. And I would like to reserve 3 minutes.
3 minutes, yes, sir.
This is one of the rare cases that is before this court on 3.26570F, which is the felony cruelty to animal statute. The most recent case that I believe this court has handled is the Vince case, and I believe Judge Huff was on the panel that decided the Vince case. That was a misdemeanor conviction that was affirmed. We get to the felony convictions, and so the law is, I don't want to use the word thin, but I would say that it's very sparse.
But is this case turn on the definition of willful?
Absolutely.
That's the only issue we have.
I believe there are two issues. One is, of course, and I think the principal larger thing that we're looking at here, and counsel at trial really got right to it because they all agreed that, and it's turned out that they were correct, I think, in my review of the law, that there's no direction from this court or the Supreme Court as to the definition of willful as to be applied to this particular criminal statute. Now, willful has been defined multiple places and in multiple contexts, but for this one, we don't have it. And so this is an opportunity for the court to do that, and I think the court is going to do that. The brief, both by the appellant and by the attorney general, I think lay out the parameters of where willful is.
Tell us which definition of willful you would suggest and why that is a more appropriate definition of willful.
Well, if we look at the, I believe we both cite into Bazemore, and Bazemore was used at trial, and then it's in both of the briefs, and I believe that the attorney general quotes from Bazemore relatively extensively, and Bazemore, of course, is quoting from the Thomas case, and that definition, if I can find it here in just a second, I believe is going to give us some direction, because we talk about the steps that we go from willful, and then we get negligence, we get gross negligence, and then you get this willful and wantonness. When we talk about here, where it's falling short of the reckless disregard of probable consequence as the equivalent to a willful and intentional wrong, with gross negligence, you've got more than just bad behavior, you've got some added animus to it. But when you come to willful, there has to be some idea of planning, and more than just I've neglected, and I've severely neglected, and I've badly neglected.
All there are plenty of cases that say omission can be willfulness.
Omission is used, and that is used in, I believe in the Sullivan case, where it talks about the omission of care can be can constitute the act of deprivation. But that's in the context of the misdemeanor, where the horse didn't get emergency care.
I found the closest analogy, frankly, to be in the line of cases that has discussed willful in the context of elder abuse and in child abuse, because that's, I see this as being animal abuse. So we've got Correll versus Commonwealth. Willful means the conduct must be knowing or intentional rather than accidental, and done without justifiable excuse, without grounds for believing that conduct is lawful or with a bad purpose. We've got Morris. Willful act imparts knowledge and consciousness that injury will result from the act done. Why isn't depriving a dog, depriving Hannibal here of food and drink, and starving them to death, the same thing as doing it to a child or to a human in terms of willfulness?
Let me just answer that, Judge Payne. If you would attach that definition to this statute and say that constitutes now willful, then you get to the second issue in this case is Judge Wright. Did this conduct rise to that level? That's That's the issue there. Is the judge, in fact, correct in assessing these facts? And those facts are plainly stated.
If this were an elderly person instead of a dog,
okay,
or this were a child instead of a dog, and the caretaker did not provide food and literally starved the elderly adult or the child to death, I don't think any of us would have any trouble saying that is willful conduct. Wouldn't you agree with that?
As to an adult or a child, an elderly adult in the incapacitated situation we're talking about, probably so. As to the animal is unable to articulate need. So, I mean, it's a double.
The animal is just as helpless as the child or the adult in this context.
And in some respects, I would agree, it is more helpless because it has no voice. The adult or the child has some voice. The animal has no voice, and particularly in this situation. But the point still is, if you attach that definition of willful in this case, I'm here to say two things. One, a definition needs to be given. In this case, at the time we tried this case, there is no definition. And so the court has now, the trial court, said, I think willful means on these facts, this man is guilty.
Now, what the trial court said is if you withhold food from an animal, it could be some form of torture and certainly willful if you don't care for it and feed it. That's the appendix, page 70. So the trial judge made a little bit more, or substantially more, factual determination than your answer suggested.
He made those factual findings. Looking at the evidence, once he decides that the acts of my client are cruel, then it's just a matter of whether or not we're really talking about misdemeanor cruelty or felony cruelty. And that's the...
But then the trial judge made what might be considered as a critical transition, and he said, certainly willful, if you don't care for it and feed it.
And it's up to this court to decide if he is correct in saying that that is the nature of willful in animal cases. Not feeding an animal is negligent. I got a dog, let's say, and I feed him every morning at 7 o'clock when I get up.
And you miss and feeding him at 7 o'clock the next morning. There's probably nothing wrong with that. It's a mistake.
Let's say I go away and I'm gone for the weekend and I leave food for the dog and it has an automatic feeder and he can get all the food he needs, he can get all the water he needs, and something happens and it doesn't work right. How many days before, you know, how far do you go before you get beyond the misdemeanor of mistreating the animal or not taking care of the animal to the felony? That's the whole issue.
In this case, weren't the facts that the defendant lived in the same space as this dog, watched the dog die, knew that the dog was not being fed or provided water, and if I recall correctly, testified that he observed the dog shaking just before finally has succumbed. At some point, hasn't this crossed the line?
The court in this case thought it had. The question before you is, does it? In fact, you have to do two things, it seems to me. You have to pick your definition and then applying the facts to that definition, forgetting what the trial court has said, except that he's made some factual findings, but applying the facts as we're left with them in the record, does it satisfy the definition that you pick? I think that the definition you have to pick is critical.
We're looking at a definition. And the General Assembly is presumed to intend a word to have the same meaning throughout the code. And the case law is replete with discussions of willful in the context of starvation. And that's what this is. So I don't understand why there would be any question as to what the definition of willful would be.
Well, there has been until this point. I mean, there isn't one up till now. So there is a question. Now, whether it's an obvious answer is something else again, but the fact is, there is the question. what is that definition to be applied in this context? I'm not suggesting, and I want this to be clear, I'm not suggesting that the activity of Mr. Polony here is not criminal. The question is it felonious or is it a misdemeanor activity? At this point, there's no way.
What you're saying is, that this court should, in the context of this case, articulate a bright line rule as to what willfulness is, and then decide pursuant to that rule that we choose to adopt whether or not the conduct in this case is willful.
That's correct. And I think I have, after having looked at the animal cases, and I had an animal case. They're very rare. I mean, obviously, there are not very many of them. I did have another animal case just a year ago, which came before this court and didn't get this far. It got weeded out somewhere along the line at the writ level, and the Supreme Court was unimpressed by my petition, and it did not go any further. But this case is here now, and it does provide an opportunity, I think, to follow up on events and to follow up on the sparseness of the case law. I'm not misled, or I don't think I'm totally naive to think that there's not going to be a decision that's going to adversely affect my client. I just think that whatever the decision is, two things have to happen. That bright line, we don't always get bright lines. We get evolutionary development of law. Here is an opportunity for something to be stated so there's some clarity. And I think clarity is a good thing, particularly when you are dealing with the disadvantaged classes. And an animal can be that. I mean, I think we could, I don't want to give you any kind of
constitutional definition, but would you have this, what definition of willful would you have us adopt?
I would, the definition that you had just recited as to the treatment of elderly, I believe you cited from the
phase one.
Correll. That definition and the definition of Bazemore, some blend of those two definitions comes, I think, the closest to what we're looking at. But whichever definition is applied here, I think once that is clearly applied and then you look at these facts, then the court has to make a decision.
But that didn't answer my question. What definition do you think is appropriate in this case? What would you have us right into the opinion to test these facts against?
And for the benefit of my client, I would make it a very high definition because you're moving from
Sanchez, can you give me some suggestions? Help me write the opinion.
I would say that you would want to say that willful is the activity or the action of particularly as the animal, that the mistreatment or the withdrawal of food or care that's egregious. I think you have to have egregious and wanton. Although wanton isn't used in the statute itself, I think if you add that in there, the legislature didn't do that, but if you put egregious in there as to the way you define this level, because you're moving from Section A, misdemeanor, to F, the General Assembly must mean some differentiation.
But is there any case law that we could rely on to support coming up with a different definition of willfulness in terms of animal neglect as we've used in other instances?
The case law is so sparse, I don't think there's anything that would actually say we have to stay in this area or go into some area.
You're in your rebuttal
time. I'm in the rebuttal time, and I will reserve the last.
And as you're sitting out, I'll give you a question to think about. You can ask it when it comes. You can answer when it comes back. Give us a definition of willfulness that is in the case law that would allow your client not to be convicted of the felonious act.
Mr. Ingram?
Good morning. May it please the court. First, Judge Petty had a question early on about does this case turn unlawfully? Is that the only issue? And I would say, based on the arguments presented at trial and on brief by the appellate, the answer is yes, that's the only issue. There was no other argument, such as, for example, he had no way of knowing that this 8-week-old puppy was sick and was dying, or that he had no reason to know that he really needed to go to the vet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There are no issues of any other, there's no issue as to whether or not he had the duty owed towards a companion animal. The sole issue ever articulated at trial or on brief is whether or not the evidence showed he acted willfully. So that's the first point. Second, counsel talks about we need a bright line rule, and to some degree, I'm not entirely sure what he means by that, but I would just simply sentence that's in my brief from a Supreme Court decision, Lynch v. Commonwealth. This is at page 11, where the court upheld an assault and battery conviction where there was an issue about whether there was sufficient proof of the touching of another person willfully or in anger. The Supreme Court said, quote, "The word willfully is variously defined in legal parlance and may mean, among other things, designedly, intentionally, or perversely. Its correct application in a particular case will generally depend upon the character of the act involved and the attending circumstances," end quote. So under any circumstances, it's necessarily going to be, in a very meaningful way, a case-specific, fact-specific inquiry. The court asked several times what sort of language, if you want to say, in order to show willful behavior under the felony version of this animal abuse statute, this standard applies. I think to the extent that you need to do that in the wake of the language I just quoted from Lynch, I would suggest any of several things, all of which
do you think the suggestion or the articulation of the principle that Judge Petty professed in the context of the elder abuse cases like Correll and Morrison would be a good guidepost for us to use?
That certainly would be one very valid source of case to look at. But for example, the Bazemore by this court quoted in part, obviously relied in part on the earlier Supreme Court decision, Thomas v. Snow, and there's language in there that I think the court could usefully adopt.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Bazemore is a driving case, eluding police, is it not?
Right, but the key
and
language.
It uses the phrase willful and wanton.
Right.
And the statute we're dealing with only uses the term willful.
Right, that's true. I see very little distinction, practically or otherwise, between willful and wanton. That's very hard for me to see how.
But the statutes dealing with child abuse and elder abuse simply use the term willful.
Right, and I think that's absolutely true. But what I'm saying, I guess, is if you prove in those cases that the person acted willfully, it's very hard for me to see how that doesn't necessarily compel the conclusion that they also acted wantonly, because the two words are either synonymous or virtually synonymous. I mean, a case where you showed, well, we proved that he acted willfully but not wantonly, I think that would be a rare case, if ever.
I mean, I can, in my mind, distinguish this concept when it's applied, you know, from this case to a case where it's applied in fleeing from the police and being, well, willful and wanton means, did you hear the signal and did you make a conscious decision to run? I can't really draw a whole lot of distinction between starving a child to death, a child starving a grandparent to death, and starving a dog to death.
No, I think that legally and factually there's no distinction worth mentioning that I'm aware of. And just not to beat this into the ground, but just on this notion of willfulness and wantonness, just page 10 of my brief, quoting Bazemore, quoting Thomas, very first sentence. Willfulness and wantonness convey the idea of purpose or design, actual or constructive. That certainly seems to me that the Supreme Court is effectively lumping those two words together. But in any event, I think any of the following is a standard that could be.
Let's move a little bit towards the application of whatever standard we adopt.
Which
is there any reason why the trial court could not have considered the abuse inflicted on the other dogs in concluding whether the actions towards Hannibal were willful?
No, I think that it's, first, there was an objection at trial, by the way, along those lines. It was overruled. It's been abandoned, it's not raised on appeal. So that's the first thing. It's just simply not a basis where they've abandoned a stated objection. They can hardly rely on it now. But beyond that, I think on the merits, it's plainly part of the overall set of facts showing what he was doing or not doing, the condition that all of these dogs were subjected to. It's pure happenstance that this one puppy died because the others were obviously not far from the same fate. I think that's, again, the language I quoted from Lynch talks about depend on the character of the act involved and the attending circumstances.
Well, the fact that the other dogs did not die, does that actually suggest here that the defendant had not willed the death? He was not willfully bringing about the death of the animals. He simply couldn't afford, he didn't have the means by which to provide for these animals. So the intentional part, he was intentionally withholding food, I suppose, because he couldn't afford it, not because he willed to bring about
their death. Well, I don't think under the case law there was any requirement by any means that he said, by doing this, that little puppy Hannibal will die just as I intend or am okay with. I mean, the language I've quoted plainly suggest otherwise. Again, Bazemore quoting Thomas V. Smith. It says, quote, it must be shown he was conscious of his conduct and conscious from his knowledge of existing conditions that injury would likely or probably result from his conduct, and that with reckless indifference to consequences, he consciously and intentionally did some wrongful act or omitted some known duty which produced injurious result. And then similarly, Bazemore says, quote, one acting wantonly, which I submit is the same as willfully, may be creating no greater risk of harm, but he is not trying to avoid it and is indifferent to whether harm results or not. Then Thomas V. Snow itself at one point says, talking about this willful wanton behavior, and it says, ordinary and gross negligence differ in degree or of inattention, while both differ in kind from willful and intentional conduct, which is or ought to be known to have a tendency to injure. It's you do this knowing that that likely will happen. That's all that's required. It's not that you have to have some subjectively hostile intent or attitude. It's in this case, I mean, these facts are about as egregious as one can imagine. This is an 8-week-old puppy. It's in a crate, so the mother can't even get to it at that point. It starves to death. The testimony of the two vets was, in a matter of common sense, this is not an immediate death. This is not a sudden matter. This is a gradual death. One of them estimated it would take 2 to 3 weeks for the dog to die. The dog was literally skin and bones. It would have been visible to anyone who was not legally blind that this puppy was in dire condition. The puppy was also anemic, which meant it did not have anything remotely like the normal energy you associate with a puppy. By the defendant's own acknowledgement, he knew that the puppy had been sick for a week. He said that the baby, which is some kind of Freudian slip here, because that's basically what we're talking about. It's a baby dog. The puppy had been shaking the morning that he died. And it's just simply should be rejected out of hand. Well, I didn't have money, so therefore, you know, the puppy had to die. That's ridiculous. There's an assertion, by the way, that he was the one to call the animal control. And he somehow, I guess, gets some benefit out of that. Maybe if that were true, maybe he might as to a sentence, but as to whether he committed the crime, even putting aside the fact that I think as the appellant, that factual conclusion should not be made, but even if he was the one to call, way too little, way too late. Under the circumstances I've described, this puppy is starving. It's starving for weeks. It's anemic. It has bloodworms and hookworms. The starvation is just striking because there was a scale that apparently vets use of 1 to 9, 9 being extreme obesity, 1 being you're wasting away. This was a 1. also, they sent off the bone marrow for analysis, because apparently when a dog is starving to death, the bone marrow somehow at the very end can produce some kind of fat briefly. And the typical dog score, that's the right word, for this bone marrow analysis is somewhere in the range of 65 to 85%. Anything under 20% is consistent with starvation. This poor little creature's score was 6.88%. People talk about the streets of Calcutta. I've never been to India, but I assume it's dreadful. This was the streets of Calcutta in a Portsmouth garage, if not worse. So given the extreme deprivation of the most basic food, water, and sanitary living conditions, given just how long it lasted, given the fact it was readily apparent to this defendant, given the defendant's acknowledgement that he knew the puppy was sick for a week and he did nothing, for him to say, well, I just didn't have the money to take him to the vet, I think means nothing as to whether he acted willfully. He chose to do nothing for that week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. He had all sorts of options. He didn't. The predictable result of this puppy dying was there. If that's not willful, which is the only issue they've ever raised, then...
So in essence, what you would suggest is distinguishing the crime from the misdemeanor that could exist is that his omission rose to such depravity that it got to willful.
Right. I think at some point, I mean, obviously, if one day you somehow forgot to do X, Y, or Z, or maybe even a puppy or a dog is getting some kind of necessary medication or whatever, just a momentary forgetting about it, I'm certainly not saying that's willful. That is so far removed from what we're talking about here. This is, again, behavior, knowing behavior for 2 to 3 weeks, did nothing. And even if he was just financially bereft, that doesn't make it any less willful. There was some suggestion at sentencing that he had some mental health issues. Well, unless there's some assertion that he was somehow criminally insane at the time.
Or incapacitated.
Well, or else some very peculiar variation on a defense of duress or necessity or something. Otherwise, at best, it goes to the sentence. It certainly doesn't go to whether he acted criminally and feloniously. So I would urge the court, as if frankly, under any of the language that you could pull out from any of these cases, he loses. The language in my brief that I have emphasized from Bazemore and Thomas v. Smith, I think any of it could be usefully cited here as his duty, which he conspicuously and for a protracted period failed to satisfy. I'd ask the court to affirm.
Thank you, Mr. Powers.
Very briefly, in response to the question on articulating a definition from the case law, interestingly and not surprisingly, the appellant and the attorney general cite the same cases, Lynch, Bazemore, Thomas, and from this say that a definition should be extracted. I'm comfortable with the Lynch definition. I'm comfortable with Bazemore and Thomas definition. I'm comfortable with any of those definitions being applied to this case. I cite them as saying these are reasonable definitions of willfulness, and as applied on these facts, my client is not guilty of the felony of animal cruelty. He clearly has transgressed the standard of care for the misdemeanor.
Why do you not think that the evidence in this case indicates that he acted willfully as defined in these other cases?
Well, one of the issues that was just raised here very briefly, and I'm totally out of time, but I will answer this question, raised by the Attorney General as well as from this court, what about all the other puppies? And there's an objection made at trial, as was pointed out. We're not raising that issue because that doesn't, it seems to me, it doesn't really factor into, from reading the transcript, to what the judge decided. It may have been in the back of his mind, but it's not there on paper saying, well, you know, we also got all these other puppies that were, we had evidence that they were mistreated and all that. That's not really the issue, so it's not there, but that fact is there. There are other puppies similarly treated, did not die. The felony gets down to the causing the death of the animal. All the puppies are being treated the same. One of them just happens to die. And that would seem to be one way to argue this is all the puppies were being fed or not fed, being treated or mistreated. They were all the same. One just because of his constitution failed. Failed to thrive and die. And that does not elevate this now to the felony.
All right, thank you. We'll step down and greet counsel and thereafter take up the case of Jeffrey Wells.
All rise.